There is the gentle, reassuring hiss of a steam iron to our right. I am sitting in a marvellous, I was going to call it a dressing room. It isn't a dressing room. I'm going to be put right. But joining me for the next episode of the Navuna Business Finance Podcast, we have Timothy Everest. Tim Everest. Timothy, probably if he's naughty, I should think.
Well, Timmy, if people are a bit confused, my friend had a cat called Timmy, and they say, Timmy, get out. So Tim or Timothy is what I'm normally called.
Tim will do. Now, we met at Times Radio a few weeks ago.
Yes.
Tim Everest, one of the great... Well, you're more than a tailor, but describe your business, Tim.
Well, I'm very flattered to say great, but yeah, we are more than a tailor. Our business is based on bespoke tailoring. Both Lloyd, who you can hear pressing in the background, actually upcycling a garment for somebody. We both met on Savile Row, just saying like over 40 years ago. But our business led us to do lots of different things beyond tailoring. What we had to do was make tailoring relevant and interesting again. And what we had to do was demystify it and explain it to people why you would consider having something made that was quintessentially British, that wasn't another designer brand. So at the time, things were seen to be long-winded, old-fashioned, expensive, boring, and elitist. Savile Row should never be elitist, but the price point, unfortunately, would make it exclusive. Yeah. So we looked at all those things, and one of the things we did talk about in the early days was the craft and how things were put together. So when we had our first premises, which was a broken-down or run-down Georgian house, one of the things we realized was that when people knocked on the door, the curtain would go up, and we would, a little bit like here, walk people through the building and explain the process. So you'd meet the person who would lead the dance, which would be Lloyd, cut the garment, and then we'd have the jacket maker, the trouser maker, the finisher, and the presser. And what was really interesting, people then learned that that's why it probably cost a lot of money or more money. That's what went into the garment. And they actually started to see the value of this artisans who could actually put together something that was very special for an individual, for that person. What has been really interesting, I think we're pretty green business. I remember a customer asking me when we first started, how long would a suit last? And I said, oh, Mr. So-and-so, it's going to last at least 10 years. And they sort of almost laughed like cheeky young salesmen. But after a few years, that sort of generation who had been buying off the peg and changing their brand or their look every season would start to say, almost apologize, I'm still wearing that jacket or suit 5 years later. And after about 10 years, it was a badge of honor, as I said to you earlier. So constantly we've got things that we're upcycling. So for a client, we've just made his 30th anniversary suit, and he's still wearing quite a lot of things. And handmade things do last. If it's a good fabric, it'll last. Things like linings, buttons, those things sometimes with wear need to be repaired. But more and more, we're looking into sustainable fabrics. We're looking into things a little bit more interesting. We're working with a really interesting shirt company out of Vicenza. We have worked for many, many years, or the business here where we are now on Chilton Street. It's worked with them for 25 years. Historically, 24120s, beautiful woven cottons. And now working with a lot of ocean waste. In particular, our best-selling shirt for a lot of our young businessmen is basically knitted like a jumper to look like a woven shirt, but it's made from recycled trawler nets. So those are the sort of things that we're exploring more and more. And we're actually being... not pushed or pressurized, but that's something our consumer base is much more interested in.
Yeah.
They want to know how something's put together. They want to know where it's come from.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we do. Yeah.
And I guess the whole fashion world and a new generation, we both have teenage daughters, but a new generation growing up, this big excitement in buying vintage clothes and Ralph Lauren and other brands for £20 because they're secondhand and what have you. But there does seem to be a growing reaction also from younger people. We've spoke about it earlier on fast fashion, on buying cheap clothes from the internet, from the high street that fall apart after a year, the throwaway culture being very not sustainable. I guess fashion is one of those things, particularly with the young generation, that there is a greater focus, I think would be fair to say, on rediscovering that value on good quality clothes that last and last for many years.
I think it's a very good observation. We've often had people in the past buy vintage and then they go and buy something off the peg and are very disappointed. And we're finding that more and more with younger people. There's two things going on. We are fundamentally a bricks and mortar retail business, which technically shouldn't exist anymore because it's all about being online. We have both, and it's very important that we do that. But we're finding that there's two things. The younger customer who's coming in is looking for an experience. They're a little bit jaded by buying things online that may not look or be put together the way that they're perceived or presented. That's not true of everything, but this is a generalization. And also, it's not a great experience on a high-ticket item when you're just researching online and it's delivered. When you can go to a shop, actually meet some like-minded people who will not only help you find exactly what you want, but also maybe surprise you with things that you didn't consider looking at. The other thing, exactly that, the whole vintage and that vintage thing, people are buying some really good pieces. Like one of the boys bought a YSL 1980s tuxedo for like £40, which we've just retailored for him. Now, that could be on the catwalk now. It's kind of oversized and whatever. So for them, it looks very fresh, but it was from the 1980s. And we've just tweaked it to make it 2024, not 1984. Mm-hmm. So more and more people are interested in quality. Then the other thing is we've got a lot of young customers. I was talking to a young Chinese customer, and we put together a look for him, which it was kind of like Comme des Garçons does from the 80s, early 80s, does Peaky Blinders. So this oversized black Peaky Blinders kind of look. And I was being a bit facetious, and I said, well, don't you ever wander down Bond Street and buy some of those brands? And they went, well, why would I go and buy things that everyone else can get? And actually, we've realized that most things are expensive doesn't mean they're the best quality. Mm. So you've got a generational there, and this is a 20-something who's observed that and is now confident to actually find things for themselves. Whereas maybe a generation before really needed the security of the brand. I'm wearing Burberry, I'm wearing that. There's nothing wrong with that. There is this growing niche, or niche as you say in America, for people are actually looking for something that's much more relevant for today and for themselves.
Okay, we'll take a break. We're back with Tim Everest, after this. We're back in this
atelier.
Yes, we're at the marvellous Grey Flannel Tailors. They're more than tailors. They're, I guess, you're almost image curators in a way, Tim, yeah, with Tim Everest.
Yeah, well, after I worked on Savile Row with Tommy Nutter, a famous tailor who had dressed the Beatles and the Stones, and I ran the store next door, Malcolm Levine, which was bringing in designer brands, and the two came together in the sense of how I built my business, Timothy Everest. So I was on Chilton Street, but I was a stylist for many years. So I worked a lot on TV commercials, on MTV with people like George Michael. This kind of dates me. Worked with Ridley Scott Associates, who was like Tony and Ridley Scott, who cut the teeth on commercials before making films like Blade Runner and Prometheus and all those big blockbusters. So we've kind of just extended that with our business, and we've always done that with bespoke. But more recently, with the wardrobe becoming more casual and more elegant, we've had to actually explore how we put total solutions together for people. So as I was explaining to you over lunch, it's not just about a bespoke suit. Some of the things, it's still very important that we make things by hand. We've got some really talented people, so we need people to come and have things made by us. But we also need to find out what we can make that the customers want to wear. Yeah. So some of the wardrobes we put together, you know, we'll have not only for a CEO or for a movie, but we'll have people traveling on a trip, and we'll have a schedule of what they want from their itinerary, and we'll create a wardrobe. So some of the pieces, whether at a very cool restaurant or a club, that might be a handmade piece, right through to they'll be at a beach club or on a yacht. That could be, you know, a washed, mercerized T-shirt and shorts. And it's about giving the right look. And the most important thing is helping those people discover themselves. So that's why we're more than tailors. We don't just cover them with cloth. We actually help them discover who they are.
And get their confidence.
Get their confidence. And also, you know, I said to you earlier, the only way to be different is, only way to be modern is to be yourself. So people like us are there to help them, because we don't really look at ourselves totally. We need someone to actually say, that would really suit you, try this, and actually be really nice. And the great success for us is when we overhear people talking about how they put together this look and how they found those things, because that's what we want to hear. Yeah. And we're on the great Chilton Street, just three doors from Chilton Firehouse, which is having a real moment at just now with a really interesting crowd. I mean, you were commenting, yeah, walking around, it's got a lovely village atmosphere. It feels slightly European. People are very happy here. It's a very comfortable place.
Very confident and stylish.
It is, yeah. So it's a very nice place to come and just hang out. And I'd forgotten that. We've basically been making to order and to measure. And being in the shop, we have some people just say it's a sunny day. They're walking around, feel good, and they want to buy something today. So it's that mix that we can offer.
Yeah. And one thing Navoon is looking at is this thing about small businesses and sustainability. You talked about, I guess, the planet friendly, you know, the climate friendly things about reusing clothes and not throwaway clothes and the provenance and sources of clothes. Tell us a little bit about your journey as a business. Do you find, as a small business, do you find the moves towards becoming a net zero or a sustainable or a green friendly business, do you find them costs or do you see it as an investment for the business?
No, of course they're costs, but we see them as investments for the future because we need to be going where people want to be. Again, when we started, actually having something handmade versus something off the peg didn't have a great value because it was more about the fashion brand and was it fashionable, who's wearing it. So we had to make things that were handmade to be fashionable and worn by the people that they would look up to. But more and more, it's very, very important. When people research you, particularly online, they want to know where you're making your clothes, how you're making your clothes, what's the content of the fabric. We have a kind of Victorian approach to sourcing. We go all over the world to find the right things. I was very, very adamant at the beginning, I can only make in the UK. Well, if you want the best nylon for a parka, you have to go to Korea for that. Yeah. You know, Asia is very, very good for synthetics, and there's a lot of really good recycled synthetics now. And a lot of those things, you know, people think, oh, synthetics terrible. No, it's some really good stuff out there. There used to be some real awful things. But if you want a really nice fine worsted, you would go to Huddersfield, or you might go to Biella in Italy, but you wouldn't go to Korea. Mm. So a bit like, you know, we would travel off and find some nice tea, we might bring it back and mix some milk and sugar. It's very important to actually go to the source to find the right sort of items. So we work from, you know, even in China, right the way through to Eastern Europe, to Italy. We make a lot in the UK. We make a lot in North London. We make a lot up in a friend's new factory up in Scotland. It's about just finding the right product for the right person. Mm-hmm. And we work with a lot of small mills. We've got one woven in the bone. She literally has a pedal machine where she literally pedals the loom. She's got very good thighs, and she should probably enter the Olympics for cycling. But you're going back to cost. It's expensive because of it's time consuming. But the customer, if they understand why they're investing a bit more money, will buy that. And then there's some things where they do need to be volume, but then we have to look at, you know, is that something that fits into our profile for sustainability and things that our customer would like.
So it's interesting, what I'm taking from the conversation with you, which contrasts to some other businesses we've spoken to in different sectors, is some small businesses, their move to be sustainable is because they want to do the right thing, or, you know, taking advice from the government or scope three, you know, moves coming in. It feels very much that in this sector that your moves are driven by being close to your customers. The customers want to see this.
Yeah, the only way, it's not the only way, but one of the most important things is to listen to your customer. And I was talking to you over lunch. I think I'm terrible when I was talking. I kept looking out the window. I'm always constantly looking at people. And exactly. I'm not very academic. I was quite visually literate. I loved movies and I love architecture, art, and those things. But actually being able to sit in a bar or something, just seeing how people interact. I mean, I talked about I quite like classic cars, but quite often I go to events to just see how people interact and how they behave, because it helps you understand what it is they might want to consume for you. Yeah. So a friend of mine is a chairman of one of the big auction houses, and it's a rather embarrassing story, but just sort of post-COVID, when you could go to events outside, I went to the Hampton Court Concourse, and I was there, and it was really interesting. There was a lot of older people who were kind of traditionally dressed, but some of the younger people, it was looking at how they were wearing sort of formal wear in a more casual way, how they were coming to an event where they wanted to be dressed up but comfortable. And I noted that the compere who was hosting it was wearing a really nice washed double-breasted denim blazer with some really nice chinos, double monk strap trousers. He had a very nice crisp white shirt and a very nice knitted tie. And I thought, that's a really cool way for someone who's the chairman of the company to present it. He doesn't look stuffy, but very elegant. Some weeks later, this guy all in white on a white scooter pulls up outside, comes in, and he's walking around. And we had actually a denim suit in store, and he was touching it and looking at it. I said, oh, it's really nice that. Do you like denim? He said, oh, I wear quite a lot of denim. I said, it was very funny. I said, I was at the Hampton Court Concourse, and I described this guy, and he said, that was me. We've become very good friends and worked together on a lot of things together. But if I hadn't gone to that, they wouldn't have given me a clue of that moment in time, because, again, we couldn't go inside, but also how we were chatting, whatever. So you have to be very close to your customer. And really, all the answers there. I think you mentioned this earlier. You work with a lot of companies. Usually all the answers are in the businesses. They're always the answers are with your customers. You've just got to sort of navigate that, observe. And I'm not being a very good listener at the moment, but being a good listener is a very important thing.
So the summary for you for sustainability, it's about knowing your customer, being driven by your customer, and adapting your business to best meet the needs of your customer.
100%. I mean, that's what we did when I worked next door. One of the reasons that I went on to do my own thing, I realized that we're an independent boutique that was stocking other people's brands. We had my boss's name on some of the key products, and they wanted to buy things from us. They didn't want other people's brands. And that kind of inspired me to get on with my business. And the thing is, yeah, we talked about that again at lunchtime. It's about being relevant. You know, I'm very inspired by the past. A lot of the movies and films that I love, a lot of them have been hacked me to death now. I'm inspired by. I had a customer in for him, a very good customer, with his son-in-law to be, and he was wanted to have a suit made by North by Northwest by Cary Grant, and we're not in 1950, whatever it is. We're in 2024. So to me, it was helping him look at the things that he was turned on by, inspired by, explaining the real history of the garment and the cut, and how a version of that would work for him, because he's not Cary Grant. He's Christian. So why would he want to dress like that? So, you know, quite often people will go down that route and they'll say, I want to wear exactly the suit from Thunderball or whatever. Well, that's fun, but then fine, but that becomes fancy dress. Why would you not be inspired by the tuxedo and say, I love the short collar, but how does that work for me? Do I do it in a black barathea, or do it in a dress black, which is a midnight blue mohair? That's the sort of thing. So the other thing is also being understanding now, you've really got to reflect on the past and think to the future. I mean, we're not very good at living in the present, but that's, I think, when the business is successful, is kind of trying to understand where it's going and referencing the past. So bespoke is a really good analogy, really, in the sense of we're not doing anything different. We're doing it differently. And I've said that several times. That's very important to me. We still want to hang on to, and, like, you know, we're still making things by hand, still pressing by hand. But there are things that we've been able to improve over the years. So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. But are there ways that you can improve it, whether it's the make, the way you present it, how you service the customer, how you create the experience? And that's really listening and working to your customers.
A last word, we'll get some links from you in a moment, Tim, but I don't know what you can talk about, but I saw your book upstairs. Can you talk about some of the films or some of the brands or some of the A-listers that you've helped with your wonderful designs?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of people we can talk about. There are many, many more we can't, and quite rightly we don't want to, and those are very discreet relationships. But on customer size, you know, we've gone from government right the way through to film. So our big break was original Mission Impossible 1. We ended up doing 4 movies there. We ended up working with Stanley Kubrick on Eyes Wide Shut. And even ended up styling the Oscars. I was paid to sit in row 4, working with Loren Scott many years ago. And that was very, very interesting. We went on to do a lot of The Crown. We've done the 3 previous Bond films, Skyfall, Spectre, and can't think of the other one, which mainly was Ralph Fiennes, but that became Dave Bautista and also Christoph Waltz. And we did something for the lead chap who I even know who it is, but I'm not supposed to say that because it was Tom Ford. So we did a lot of film stuff, and then we did a lot of collaboration. You know, starting in a derelict house, when people knocked on the door, we would say and ask us to do something, we'd say yes and worry about the consequences. So we had to learn things
you
like
that. You have to do that, I guess, as a small business.
You do. And yeah. so you had to communicate, so you had to learn a little bit about how to work on PR. Then when people asked us to put collections together, we had to learn how to storyboard, illustrate that. So yeah, we did a very big project. One of the first ones we did was for M&S, where they were looking for newness, and we ended up creating Sartorial for them. And then we worked and repackaged Autograph for Stuart Rose. We did a big project for Superdry. We've done experiential experiences for people like Rolls-Royce. We did a lot in the cycling world. So Rafa, we worked with Brooks England. Pearson, the oldest bike shop in the world, we rebranded down in Sheen. And then we worked extensively in countries like mainly in the Far East, in Japan, Taiwan. We had license agreements there. We've worked with brands in Korea. Like we've worked with LG out there. We've worked with Colon out there. So, yeah, there's an awful lot of lists, and I'll send my deck. So if you can't sleep tonight, you can have a look at it. But, yeah, it's quite fascinating. And you mentioned the book upstairs. The book, Ray, we were very lucky to get commissioned to write a book, and a friend wanted to co-write it with us. And it was really to try and, from the view of a boy who was a wet Friday in Milford Haven, wouldn't think he'd be sitting here with Guy talking about his business, because that was the thing that was never planned. I just thought I would start somewhere and maybe I'd stay there. And by saying yes and meeting people and listening to people, we are here, I think, in 2024 and doing something really interesting.
Very good. Well, look, Tim, this has been an exciting adventure through this labyrinth of rooms down to this rather lovely creative space. Anyone listening to this podcast for Navuna Business Finance who wants to discover you more, I know you have an online presence. Apart from popping into the shop, where do people need to go online to find you?
If you go to greyflannel.co.uk, you'll find us there. There's another Instagram, which is Mr.TimSees. You can find us on those both those places.
Tim, let's go and look at some of your suits. But for now, thank you for your time.
No, thank you for your lovely questions.